Hello and welcome to the Trial Talk podcast. I'm your host, Charlotte Hartley, and I'm a Science Communications Officer at the MRC Clinical Trials Unit at UCL. In this show, we explore the clinical trial landscape by talking to the clinicians and researchers behind the work we do. If you're interested in learning how research can help improve healthcare in the UK and around the world, this is the podcast for you. We're back this year with a new series for 2024. It's also a very special year for the MRC Clinical Trials Unit, as we're celebrating our 25th anniversary. That's 25 years of smarter studies, global impact, and better health. As well as clinical trials and studies, our unit carries out methodological research to help improve how studies are designed, conducted, and analysed. In this episode, I'm speaking to two of our methodology researchers, Peter Godolphin and David Fisher, who both work on meta-analysis, which is essentially bringing together data from multiple different studies or trials into one big analysis.
So I'm Peter Godolphin. I'm a statistician and senior research fellow at the MRC Clinical Trials Unit at UCL, and I'm working mainly in meta-analysis. I'm working mainly in prostate cancer studies.
Yeah, I'm David Fisher. I'm a senior statistician with the meta-analysis group here at MRC Clinical Trials Unit at UCL. I've worked within the unit for a number of years. I started as a trial statistician, and now I work in various areas across meta-analysis, including leading some novel methodology and driving the projects that we're currently working on in prostate cancer. But also in other areas too.
So clinical trial results will usually tell us how effective a treatment was, on average, for the overall group of participants. But a really important question for doctors, patients and policymakers is which individual patients benefit most from the treatment and which don't benefit so much. One way to figure this out is by carrying out a subgroup analysis. So today we're going to talk about a new method for subgroup analysis, which you've developed within the meta-analysis group, called the Within Trial Framework. We'll get into the methodology more in a second, but let's start by explaining, what do we mean by a subgroup?
So in a clinical trial, the aim is that we have a question we want to answer. So for instance, is an intervention better than a control? And in order to answer that question, we aim to recruit a certain pre-specified number of participants who have the disease or condition of interest and who we deem to be eligible according to certain criteria. So we have inclusion and exclusion criteria. And what that it gives us is a group of participants who are all similar in certain ways, but of course, they're still individual people and they have differences between them. So what we mean when we talk about subgroups is we mean breaking down the total group of trial participants into smaller groups based on certain measurable characteristics. And typically these characteristics are either immutable to the individuals themselves, such as their age or their sex, or they are characteristics that are measured at the time that the patients enter into the trial. And they might be characteristics of their disease, for instance, or their health at that particular time.
And why is it important to look at subgroups, especially in the context of meta-analysis?
I mean, this is really the key thing, and one of the real benefits of meta-analysis, as you said, bringing together lots of similar trials. So I'll just take a step back first, just talking a bit about why we might want to look at these subgroups and thinking that these trials are, as David said, recruiting a variety of patients with a variety of different characteristics, some older, some younger, might be males, females, etc. So whilst the participants will be quite similar to each other, they'll actually also differ in a number of ways. And a large trial, you might then expect a fair amount of variation between our patients in the actual trial. So when the trial is reporting an overall treatment effect, so does the treatment work for the average patient, this might not actually be that useful when you think about it, because no real average patient exists. So is that useful for the clinician treating a patient in the clinic? Is that really useful for a patient when they're thinking about themselves? in reality, some patients will actually experience a greater or a lesser treatment effect. And it might be due to their individual characteristics. So it might be that the treatment works better for older patients compared to younger patients, or it works better for patients with a greater severity of disease compared to one with a lesser severity of disease. So this is why we want to look at subgroups in the first place, because if we can identify these subgroups of patients where the treatment works really well, we can then really kind of identify who we should treat. And vice versa, we might identify a subgroup of patients where the treatment doesn't work or maybe is even harmful. And then, you know, we can make sure those patients don't get that treatment, or we can design a future study in this subgroup of patients to try and identify a new treatment for them. So now going to meta-analysis, and really the problem with an individual trial is you only recruit enough patients to really assess that overall treatment effect. Now, trials take a lot of time and resources, so you're not really ever going to recruit more patients than necessary. And looking at these subgroups, we're then splitting the trial up into parts, and actually you need more information or more patients to actually look at this reliably. So a clinical trial by itself will never really be able to give us a really clear answer of whether or not that treatment effect varies in these different subgroups of patients. Now, this is where meta-analysis comes in. In a meta-analysis, we're pooling multiple data sets together. So instead of a trial of 1,000 patients, we now say have 10 trials, total of, for example, 8,000 patients. So we have lots more information to actually look at these secondary questions. So we actually then can more reliably work out, does the treatment effect vary by, say, age or by sex or by disease severity? So we actually can look at subgroups in a meta-analysis context. And this may actually be the only really reliable way to do this at all.
So before we move on to your new method for analysing the differences between subgroups, how would researchers traditionally analyze subgroup effects, and what are the limitations to these methods that motivated you to develop a new method?
Yeah, so it's really, really good to think about this, and I'll try and do it with an example of sex. So say, does the effect of our treatment differ based on whether or not you're male or female? Now, if you think about this question in a meta-analysis, you might have, say, two trials for argument's sake, and that first trial might recruit mostly males, so say 90% males and only 10% females, and the second trial, again by chance, might recruit 90% females and only 10% males. So these two trials will actually have quite a big difference in terms of the population. Now, the traditional approach in a meta-analysis to look at subgroup analysis is to pull together all of the data on the males. So that's 90% of trial one, 10% of trial two. And here we have an estimate of the treatment effect for males. Now, for females, it would be 10% of trial one and 90% of trial two gives us an estimate for the females. Now, hopefully you can start to see that actually that male subgroup result is driven almost entirely, 90%, by trial one, and that female subgroup result is driven almost entirely by trial two. So if the first trial just happened to estimate a larger treatment effect than the second, for whatever reason, maybe it was giving a greater dose of the treatment or for some other reason, then actually the data might suggest on average, males get a far better benefit of the treatment than females.
As following on from what Peter's just said, the really, really important thing to think about here is that there's no reason to make the assumption that just because we see a difference between the overall treatment effects in those two trials, that means that an individual male is going to do better than an individual female. In other words, what we're looking at is an association that's mostly at the trial level. But what we are really interested in is looking at subgroups of individuals rather than trials. And statistically, there is no reason to assume that just because we see one association at the trial level, that we will also see an association at the individual level. And this phenomenon is an example of a much more general phenomenon, which is called Simpson's paradox. It occurs throughout scientific research. In this particular context, in meta-analysis and patient subgroups, we tend to refer to it as aggregation bias or sometimes ecological bias. Now, we've done a lot of work in this area, and we've done literature reviews. We've looked at what's done in practice. And what we generally find is that, okay, maybe generally speaking, the old method and our new method that we're going to talk about in a second, they often give similar results, but sometimes they don't. And this is because, as I say, the association at the trial level does not imply the association at the individual level. And although things are getting better in recent years, it was the case that many analysts just seemed to be unaware that this phenomenon existed and they needed to take care about it. So it's we feel that it's really important, especially since there's been a lot of talk recently about individualized or personalized stratified medicine.
So we've got this problem of aggregation bias, where the results of the group might not match the results of individuals within that group. Can you tell me about your new method for subgroup analysis and how it addresses this problem?
Our new method is based on something that we've come to refer to as the within trial framework. And what we mean by that is that we want to concentrate on estimating quantities within trials rather than mixing up different parts of trials, which is the central problem outlined by what Pete said earlier. So in this approach, what we want to do is first to estimate the difference between subgroups, not using all of the information from all of the trials, but actually just within each individual trial separately. If you take an individual trial, of course, that trial would do that anyway. Each individual trial would probably report the treatment difference between males and females. And so all we want to do in the first stage here is to do that separately for each trial, because regardless of whether you've got 90% of one subgroup males, 10% of the other females, whatever it is, for an individual trial, that doesn't matter. The difference between the groups is a valid estimate. And so when we pull those estimates across trials, we still have a valid average difference. And we can do that in a similar way that we would pull a main treatment effect in any standard meta-analysis. And this allows us to test for the subgroup difference. So testing for whether or not there is a difference. But what that test by itself doesn't do is tell you give you an estimate of what the actual overall effect size is for males and for females. In the old method that Pete described, of course, that you get that for free. It comes out naturally. But if we don't want to do that, if we want to look at the within trial framework, you don't get it automatically. You need to do some work. So that's what our new method does. It adds a second stage of analysis. So once you've got your pooled difference, we then reanalyze all of the data from all of the subgroups in a particular way so that we obtain a collection of mutually consistent results. We have the pooled difference. We have an effect size in males. We have an effect size in females. We have p-values. We have confidence intervals, covariances, variances, etc. And those collection of results are then consistent. In other words, the difference between our pooled male result and our pooled female result is equal to the pooled difference that we previously calculated.
And are there still any challenges or limitations of the new within trial framework?
Yeah, so I mean, the main limitation here comes from trials that we're calling single subgroup trials. So what we mean by this, if we go back to the male-female example, is a trial that just recruits males or just recruits females. If you think about what David just said, in that first stage of our method, we're working out the difference between males and females within each trial. Now, obviously, if the trial only recruits males, there's no difference to work out. So actually, we can't use that data to contribute to that pooled overall estimate of the difference. So our method actually can still include the data from that trial in our second stage. But what you need to consider, and what this method does, is it essentially then implicitly assumes that actually, say that trial did recruit females, the difference between males and the females would equal that pool difference we found from the other studies. Now, this assumption is actually untestable. So what we would recommend really is, if you have lots of these studies that don't contribute to the difference, that means that our pooled subgroup difference is only using a minority of the data. So in this case, you know, maybe we wouldn't advise using this method. I will just say as a caveat, the traditional method as well will have exactly very similar problems as well. So it might be that in this case, you decide you just can't do that subgroup analysis at all.
And I believe you've already started putting this methodology into practice. So could you share any examples of studies which have used the within trial framework, and what impact have these studies had?
A lot of the work that we're doing currently in our meta-analysis group concerns a long-running series of meta-analyses in the field of prostate cancer, which is called STOPCAP. And so as early as 2017, we piloted early versions of this framework in STOPCAP reviews looking at a treatment called abiraterone for advanced prostate cancer, and also of radiotherapy for locally advanced prostate cancer. And what we did there is not only to look at the statistics and the testing, but also the graphical presentation. So we've put a lot of thought into how we display these results in the way that makes it clear to readers what we've done and why. In a standard meta-analysis, you use something called a forest plot, where you can see each of the individual studies that are included very clearly and what their effects are. And we basically generalize that idea so that we can show it shows all of the subgroups within each of the trials and how they contribute to the between subgroup differences and such like.
So more recently, we've been involved in some studies looking at COVID-19. So looking at what treatments should we give patients who are hospitalized with COVID-19 to stop them dying or improve other outcomes. For example, discharge from hospital quicker, that kind of thing. And I guess just to say that this method or within trial framework can be used actually with published data. So if the trials publish their results, that's all we need actually to use our method. We don't actually need to get the individual data from each of the trials. That's a real benefit. And so one meta-analysis that used this published data in COVID-19 was looking at something called interleukin-6 antagonists. And there were about 27 trials, I think, in total throughout the early stages of the pandemic that recruited patients hospitalized with COVID-19 and gave them either interleukin-6 antagonist or the control, the standard of care. In this, one of the key subgroups of interest was thought whether or not patients got a corticosteroid. So in some trials, no patients got corticosteroids at all. In some, all of them got corticosteroids as well as the randomized treatment. And some proportion of them got corticosteroids and some proportion didn't. So this is exactly the kind of situation where we can look at a subgroup analysis and we can say, does the use of corticosteroids modify that treatment effect, the effect of the interleukin-6 antagonists? In actual fact, in this analysis, we actually did find really strong evidence of a subgroup effect. So whilst we found the overall treatment effect, the interleukin-6 antagonists reduced mortality, I think by about 13% at 28 days, we actually found that if you also receive a corticosteroid, there's this double benefit. So patients had far greater benefit in reduction in mortality compared to those that didn't receive corticosteroids. So actually this was really, really important and fed into the WHO guidelines for COVID-19. One of the reasons this was so important was actually at that time the standard of care for patients hospitalized with COVID-19 had changed to actually incorporate corticosteroids as part of the standard of care. So this subgroup effect of patients with corticosteroids was really important, and this analysis and these results fed into the WHO strongly recommending in favour of these interleukin-6 antagonists.
I'm just going to add a second example. So what Pete's been talking about so far are examples where we're using summary data either taken directly from trial publications, or sometimes what we do is that we go back and ask trialists to give us particular results, but either way they are summary results. Another form of meta-analysis, which is much more powerful potentially, is IPD, which stands for individual participant data. meta-analysis. And what this is the collaborative group requests from the trial investigators a subset of their original raw data. And this allows us to fit a wide range of statistical models and answer much more complicated questions. And last year, we published the first of our large IPD analyses looking at a treatment called docetaxel. And because we had access to the IPD, we were able to develop a far more advanced version, amongst other things, of our within trial framework. And we were able to combine the basics of the framework with various advanced features of individual data analysis. This allowed us to really get to the heart of subgroup effects that clinicians in this area were sort of aware of and had some idea were important, but we were able to really give them detailed answers on exactly the size of the effect, whether the effects were constant over time or whether they interacted with other variables as well.
So you've mentioned already about the impact on medical guidelines, which is really great. So what has the response been like from other stakeholders, like patients, clinicians, or other methodologists?
So what we found throughout the IPD project, and actually earlier than that as well, was that everyone has been really supportive of what we're trying to do. So that includes our co-funders, Prostate Cancer UK, our international clinical collaborative group, our patient representatives as well. That's really important. All of them understand what we're trying to do, why subgroups are important, and why the best analysis possible of subgroups is really, really important for patients' outcomes. So we've had these projects published in high impact journals. As Pete has mentioned, they're starting to impact guidelines in certain areas. We're pushing through these ideas through to the clinical community and also into the patient's community. And it just enables everyone to have better understanding of these effects.
Just to add on then to what David was saying, we presented lots of these ideas at numerous different conferences, different audiences. And actually I presented last year at the Cochrane Colloquium this framework and was lucky enough to win the prize for best presentation by a young investigator. And lots of people after this conference have come up and spoken to David and I and inquired about the framework. And we've disseminated some of the ideas. And some people have been critical, of course. These are ideas that are, you know, still fairly new, and some people don't necessarily agree with everything that we've done. But lots of this has been quite constructive, and you know, working together with some of them to work out exactly what they don't understand or exactly where we can take some of these ideas next. So yeah, you know, the impact, as well as having kind of real clinical benefit or real clinical impact, also has had some impact on kind of the statistical community or the evidence synthesis community as well.
So if there's any other researchers out there who might be listening and thinking they want to give this a try and use your methodology, how would they go about doing so?
Although the method can be taken in various directions, and I've kind of explained, you know, how it can be quite complicated, it can also be very, very simple. And actually the very simplest form of the method, if you just have summary data on each of your subgroups from each of your trials, you can use the method in Microsoft Excel or a basic spreadsheet package. But of course, as I say, you can add complexity to that. So the main way in which we've implemented it is in a software package that we've written for the Stata statistical application. And so our code to implement the method is currently available via the UCL GitHub page. And in the future, if possible, we'd like to make it available through the statistical application R, which is freely available. And so it has that advantage over Stata that literally anyone can use it.
And just to add there, just if anyone is interested in using the method, just contact Dave or I, one of us. We're always happy to help share code and, you know, try and work out how you can apply these methods to your situation.
And so what do you think are the next steps along the road of this research, and what do you hope you might achieve in the future?
So as David's kind of been mentioning, we're trying to work through some of these more advanced methods and trying to formalize and just kind of tie up the loose ends of these at the moment. And if you think about it, what we've been talking about is subgroups. So, you know, the example we've used throughout is males and females, but of course it could be anything. Imagine age could be less than 50, greater than 50. And whilst this is still useful to look at a continuous covariate like age, in actual fact, it might be more useful to think about age continuously. So not look at it, split it to less than 50 and greater or equal to 50, but actually look at the entire continuous spectrum of something like age or say BMI or any other kind of continuous covariate. We'd also like to get some additional funding to compare our method with other kind of emerging methods that are coming about. And in particular, I've managed to win some funding through Prostate Cancer Foundation to actually look at this in a prostate cancer setting specifically and compare some older and current methods really to try and push the limits of more what we might be able to achieve. You know, how can we identify the patients that are most likely to benefit from a new intervention? Really trying to do this in a practical and clinically useful way.
So my final question is, if any listeners want to find out more about the Within Trial framework for subgroup analysis, where can they go?
So right now, the best thing to do is to read our open access publication in the journal Research and Methods, which was published last year, 2023. And that summarizes the statistical basis for the framework and gives some simple examples. And also, if you look at the bibliography for that paper, you'll find various bits of previous work that we've also done in this area. You can access the UCL GitHub page to find our statistical software, as I've already mentioned. And we're putting together some a variety of practical examples on the GitHub as well.
And if anyone's interested, I've actually just recently given a webinar for the Cochrane Statistical Methods Group, exactly talking through this method, talking through our paper, and kind of giving examples and showing how the method works in action. And so I think this has been recorded, and you'll be able to access the webinar on the Cochrane website. And yeah, going forward, we're going to continue to try and keep publishing, working through some of these methods, disseminating what we find and on this topic. So yeah, watch this space.
And that is the end of this episode of Trial Talk. We've shared the resources that David and Pete mentioned in the podcast description, so do check them out if you want to find out more. We've also shared contact details if you want to get in touch. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at MLCCTU and on LinkedIn at MLC Clinical Trials Unit at UCL for all the latest updates. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.